action.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. You see a very common thing that, you know, if you don't use it, you'll lose it, or a lot of goal orientation in doing postures. When the average person comes to a yoga class or even flips open a yoga book, the first thought, and it's only natural, that you have is, how long will it take me and when will I be able to do that posture? So what I learn and what I teach now is that it's not important for you to be able to do any posture. What's important is to be able to learn how to use the postures as tools and use all the practices of yoga as tools to serve your own body and your own well-being instead of the opposite, which is using your body in order to attain a yoga pose.
So when I got out of the book. That's what I got. That was a fascinating insight, truthfully, that I gained from that. And I hadn't thought about that. And I suspect that just the fact that people see these kinds of positions that obviously are attainable by most people if they would practice. And you related, I think, one of your first fellow became one of your first teachers who was so stiff and just unbending, but was able to do this. But at the same time, you're saying, no, that there's another process involved, and whatever you need, you're going to get if you understand the process that's going on, regardless of how flexible you actually end up.
Exactly. That it's much, you know, what I realize is I'd much rather be able to walk and hike and swim than be able to do a certain yoga pose. So I had to readjust my practice, and now, you know, I still do some pretty advanced poses, but my context shifted. So I'm using, that's what I teach people to do, is to use the poses for their own well-being. Sure, you still want to get more flexible and be able to do some of the great-looking postures, but deeper than that is to learn how to properly use them to serve yourself.
And we should also explain to folks that the posture part, the hatha yoga, is just a part of the overall panorama that is yoga.
Yeah, it's a broad, you know, people, the most common question you get is, what is yoga? And the popular understanding of yoga relates mostly to the physical practices. And even there, people think only of flexibility. When I tell people I teach yoga, they often say, oh, I like to do some stretching too. But yoga involves strength and flexibility and endurance and energy levels, many things besides just flexibility. And similarly, it applies to every area of life. It's an exploration of whole living. So that includes relationship and nature and science and understanding your own consciousness and your mind, and inquiring into the whole nature of life.
And to that regard, there was one, I'm trying to remember what you called it. Was it wave consciousness? The standing wave. That was fascinating to me. I mean, understanding, even without moving, so to speak, you know, understanding what's going on at that time in your body, mind, spirit.
You have really read the book. I'm honored.
I did.
Thank you.
Fascinated.
Well, a standing wave is something I learned about in science, and it's, you know, the listeners never heard the term. We all know what they are, actually, because the most common one is in a river. When you go to a river and you see like a boil or a wave just sitting on the river, not one that's moving along, but it's standing, maybe the water's going over a rock or a tree stump, and it creates a wave-shaped form that is still, but it's actually filled with moving river. The river's making it, and it's not still at all, but the form is still. So it's called a standing wave in science. And I realized that there was a lot to learn from that in poses, because yoga practice is a mixture of poses you hold for a certain period of time to get an effect, and also movements. And in the poses you hold, called asanas or postures, you're holding them steadily and still, and you're not moving. But what you're really learning to do is move a lot of internal energy. So there's a lot of flow up and down the body and through the nerves and through the joints and even through the bones. And you can actually feel this and measure it. It's not a metaphysical thing. It's a physical energy. and it's it builds strength and flexibility and vibrancy and vitality. It's very powerful.
Well, and it was very powerful reading about it, you know, in, and also in the sense it's almost like a kind of a plucked string analogy. I mean, once you strike any chord in the body, if you kind of understand what's going on and take time to listen, you're going to find it affects all areas of the body.
Well, that's another principle in science and in music, like you said, that's called sympathetic resonance. So you strike a D note, and all the other guitars with a D note start, all the other strings start vibrating. So that's one of the principles we use in healing pain and injury. For example, if you tweak your back or something, it affects your whole body, and sometimes other injuries you had before start acting up with it because they vibrate in that resonance, and so your neck injury starts bothering you, and your shoulder starts bothering you, or something like that. So what you need to do is set up a sympathetic positive resonance of well-being by doing certain postures and poses that feel good. And the beauty of yoga is, metaphorically, there's 840,000 postures, which means no matter where you're at, no matter what stage or what type of injury you have, there's plenty you can do that still feels good and sets up that healing feeling, we call it, that creates a positive healing resonance in your body, and then your injuries start melting away.
So, and part of what you said as well, in terms of if you don't have, let's say, the extensive ability, range of movement, for example, but just holding something within the range that's comfortable for you, obviously a lot of these things are going to be activated.
That's right. So many people look at the yoga books and they say, gee, I'm stiff, I'm inflexible, yoga isn't for me. But yoga is infinitely adjustable, so it can be adjusted to for anyone where they're at so that they can hold the pose comfortably and start getting benefit. And another thing I like to point out is, you know, sometimes people start yoga when they're 40 or 50 or even 60 or 70, and they think, God, you know, I'm stiff and so on. But I think no matter what age you're at, If someone said to you, how would you like to be able to maintain the level of strength, flexibility, and endurance you have now and have it in 20 or 30 years from now? And anybody would say yes. Well, that's pretty easy to do with yoga without even trying to make progress. To maintain where you're at, which is a huge benefit, it can be done with a simple yoga practice.
Ganga, again, I was. It was interesting to me, just from the kind of the biography standpoint of looking at how you've done some of the things you've done and where you've gone in order to gain the knowledge that you've obtained. Very, very amused and entertained with your journeys to the Himalayas and talking about being there and with a very, very advanced yogi. And some of the folks that you mentioned, there was a particular practice that they did. I was kind of like, what was it called? Heating or some type of thing where they were able to heat their bodies. You were talking about kind of these rangy, hardy types that you were surrounded by up there. That was interesting to me.
Yeah, there's a practice high in the Himalayas where it's cold year-round and snow and ice most of the time year-round. And there are these various yoga lineages of practitioners that live up there, and they learn how to generate internal heat so that they can crack open the ice and jump in and take a shower in a lake or a river in the middle of winter and stay warm, and to get their initiation or their, you know, accepted into as a teacher, you have to take a wet blanket in the cold, snowy winter and wrap it around your body and dry it from your own body heat instead of freezing yourself. So they learn how to do this. It's quite astounding. I can't do it, but it's just to see the power of the mind and body is inspiring.
It is inspiring, and there's also a symbolism there. And do you think, though, that You know, the idea that one would have to travel to the Himalayas, for example, not only to see that, but to kind of reach your spiritual apex. It's kind of like you've shown that, well, you know, that can be a metaphor as well. And we don't necessarily have to undertake that particular journey, but there are other ways to kind of explore yourself here.
Well, there's one journey you do have to take, and that's within. You have to explore your own mind, body, and consciousness. And it really doesn't matter. You don't have to go to the Himalayas. And there are probably more distractions in India, even though it's an extraordinary and amazing place. But it's, you know, also filled with a lot of chaos and hype. And to find your way there, I mean, I was lucky to have some good teachers and guides. But I really believe, and I tell my students all the time, that the best teachings and the cutting edge of yoga practice and insight is in America. And it's
how does
really
that
true.
Make them feel it? How does that make them feel in India?
Well, they're trying to reclaim it, and you know, they're coming. It's caused a huge surge of interest in India because of what's happened in the West and in Europe, you know, in Europe and here. So, you know, there's a tremendous increase. Even in India.
Well, I don't know, again, if it was true, but I remember years ago a friend of mine who was very much into the Hatha yoga had gone over there, and perhaps without a great deal of insight as to where he should go or how, but he just figured that once he got there, he'd just see everyone practicing yoga everywhere, or at least the postures, and he said he had a real hard time finding someone doing that.
That's right. It's a little different now, but it's just like here. There are small yoga centers now all over the place, but to find really great teachers, you have to do some digging, and the same here. But it's not everywhere in India.
In terms of the practice, though, what's going on, you stress over and over again, and that in order, obviously, to get the benefit, and the people that you've seen who do benefit the most are obviously the people who stay with it. Now, that can be part of